I'm Brandi Cruz. Coming up today on Undivided, a ton to get to. We'll obviously talk about what happened in Idaho yesterday and the latest on that. Also, Supreme Court to the rescue, limiting the power of lower courts to issue sweeping rulings. What President Donald Trump says that means for some of his key policies and executive orders and how it'll impact us here. And Black people who got parking tickets on Juneteenth are crying racism. That and much more coming up today on Undivided. Remember, you can support our show for just $5 a month by signing up at undividedpod.com. That's undividedpod.com. Welcome to Undivided on this Monday. Thank you for being here. Thank you so much for your commitment to giving common sense a comeback. I'm Brandi Cruz. We have a few quick things to talk about and then a ton of other things to get to on the show today. I have to mention, though, you know, it always bothers me that new laws, the enactment of new laws coincides with my birthday every year. My birthday's July 2nd. So the day before, the state of Washington always gives me some really crappy gifts in the form of usually new taxes. So we just wanted to friendly reminder to those of you living in Washington state, fill up your gas tanks today because tomorrow it's going to cost an additional 6 cents a gallon. Also going up in cost tomorrow because Democrats can't balance a budget and haven't found anything they don't want to spend money on, so you guys have to pay for it. Discover Pass costs went up by 50%. Also hunting, fishing, you know, they hate conservatives, so they're going to make everything more expensive. Any adventure, God forbid, you're going to go on a hunting adventure that you need a Discover Pass for some reason, you got to drive there. Triple whammy. So just letting you guys know, gas up today. All right, I do want to talk really quickly about what happened in Idaho yesterday. Just horrible news. I mean, there's not much that I can say about it beyond what's been covered just wall to wall for the last 24 hours. We do know the suspected shooter in Idaho is dead, believed to have lit a fire in this wilderness area on a mountain ridge. This is from Fox News. As a way to draw in, of course, law enforcement and firefighter response, had a history of making some troubling statements about first responders on his social media. He's been identified as Wes Rowley, like 20 years old, a pretty young kid. So this went on for several hours. He had a firearm, you know, started the fire. They believe that then as soon as first responders came, he started opening fire, killed two firefighters. Another one was injured pretty critically, but is expected to survive. And then his body was spotted, you know, by helicopters. They were able to hone in. I mean, feds jumped in right away, the White House, the FBI, and they had technology that allowed them to identify this cell signal that had been in the same location for an extended period of time. So they had good reason to believe that that might be their shooter. So using the technology the feds brought in, they were able to hone in on that cell signal, spotted, you know, a dead body with a gun next to it and said, well, that's got to be our shooter. And then it became a really complicated situation because the fire that the shooter started or is believed to have started was nearing the body, which could have, you know, their whole crime scene and everything gone up in flames. So they ended up just scooping up the shooter, the remains, and then the firearm that was near him. And that's not ideal, obviously, for any sort of investigation. But the alternative was, you know, the fire takes over the whole scene and they have nothing. So there's still a lot of information that we need to sort out. But just a horrifying, horrifying ordeal for everyone really in Eastern Washington and in Idaho across the border, all the agencies that responded there, certainly to the fire department. So, you know, on this show, if there's opportunities where we can help out those fire agencies in the weeks and months ahead, you know, alert us to those opportunities and we'll make sure that we talk about them on the show a little bit. But, and I will also say, I'm just going to say, because I know a lot of people are thinking it, first thing that popped in my mind was Travis Decker. Like, is that Travis Decker, the guy who killed his three daughters out there or something? So, and nobody had asked at the press conference. That question didn't even come up. And so I thought that was weird. But of course, it ended up not being Travis Decker. It was just something that was going through my mind all day yesterday. So we'll keep our eye on that. Just horrible, heartbreaking what's going on over there. All right. I want to talk about SCOTUS stepping in on Friday and just making my whole weekend. So there's a couple things going on with SCOTUS, but I think one of the more significant rulings happened while they were considering Donald Trump's birthright citizenship order. So as a result of that, they ended up doing something a little more overarching and basically said, hey, these lower district court rulings are becoming far too sweeping. where you've got one district court judge in one jurisdiction in the country, typically in a very blue area, very progressive area where the judges tend to lean left as well. And then all of a sudden, just like that, one of President Donald Trump's policies is on hold across the whole country. And so the Supreme Court ruling, multiple stories on this over the weekend, not only does it limit judges' power to block Trump policies nationwide, kind of limiting against these quote unquote universal injunctions, but also it could revive, this from the New York Times, how the Supreme Court's ruling could revive some contested Trump policies. So that happened as part of this, and it was, you know, in the context of the birthright citizenship order, which, again, I've had issues with. I don't necessarily agree with the birthright citizenship order in its entirety. I have some, I guess, nuanced opinions on that. But limiting the ability of a single federal judge to be able to derail a president's policies across the whole country makes a ton of sense. Because then you have areas of the country where you have a district, you could have had that same case heard in a different district court somewhere else in the country, come to a totally different conclusion. So in essence, you have the whole country held hostage by these blue state district court judges that are very highly ideological. And you just put the shoe on the other foot, because I'm not saying that in red states they don't have highly ideological district court judges. Of course they do. But you don't think Democrats cry foul when they have a Democratic president and then you've got a district court judge in a red state that upends an entire policy before it ever gets to the U.S. Supreme Court? It makes no sense. So essentially what it'll do is limit, like, let's say, and for instance, if you're in the U.S. District Court in Seattle, you have a judge that says, you know, this Trump policy has to be put on hold. Maybe it's a travel ban sort of thing, or maybe it's a birthright citizenship, you name it. And so, yeah, it's going to be on hold in that district court judge's area where his rulings matter, right? So in the Seattle area, in the U.S. District Court for the Western District of Washington, but not anywhere else. And in order for it to go in place anywhere else, then it has to work its way up to, you know, Court of Appeals and then the U.S. Supreme Court. So that makes a lot of sense. Not a surprise, Attorney General Nick Brown in Washington State is not happy with this. He tweeted out, "The Supreme Court's ruling is disappointing on many levels, but importantly, this morning's order does not dispute the issue we handily won in the trial court, that President Trump's attempt to strip birthright citizenship is unlawful and wrong. The justices also confirmed that courts may issue broad injunctions when needed to provide complete relief to the parties. In the case led by Washington State, the trial judge already ruled that nationwide relief is necessary to protect Washington and its co-plaintiffs from the harms from the executive order. We continue to believe that President Trump's unconstitutional and cruel order must be stopped across the country to guarantee protection for Washington and its residents." Well, that's fine if you believe that, but now you're going to have to do a little bit more than find one ideologically driven district court judge to agree with you in that regard. And I don't understand how, if you're the Attorney General for Washington State, so you're filing it because you have to prove standing, right? So you have to show that you have, and you do, right, that you have an individual here whose birthright citizenship would be in jeopardy in Washington State if President Donald Trump's order is going to be allowed to go into effect. So I don't understand why you would need, in order to protect the person or persons that fall under your jurisdiction as the Washington Attorney General, why would you need the order to apply nationwide? I don't see how you can make that case in any sort of convincing way. Now, again, I have said on the birthright citizenship that I didn't think that President Donald Trump had the constitutional authority to just unilaterally say, oh, birthright citizenship is null and void, and certainly not to go back in time, right, and say, oh, you're here because of birthright citizenship, and you were born here, but now you got to go back to where? Like, go back to what country? Now, I believe it might be appropriate to look at that and limit it in future instances because, as the president has pointed out, and I'll play a clip from him in a moment, you know, the birthright citizenship as it's being utilized today is not ever what it was intended for. And I agree with him on that. But how do you go about changing that and making sure that you narrow the protections for who? Because then you get the anchor baby situation, right? But this ruling, although it was born out of the birthright citizenship, it's going to have a wide-ranging impact on a lot of other district court rulings that have halted President Trump's policies and executive orders nationwide. Here's President Trump responding.
"We can now promptly file to proceed with numerous policies that have been wrongly enjoined on a nationwide basis. And some of the cases we're talking about would be ending birthright citizenship, which now comes to the fore. That was meant for the babies of slaves. It wasn't meant for people trying to scam the system and come into the country on a vacation. This was, in fact, it was the same date, the exact same date, the end of the Civil War. It was meant for the babies of slaves, and it's so clean and so obvious. But this lets us go there and finally win that case because hundreds of thousands of people are pouring into our country under birthright citizenship, and it wasn't meant for that reason. It was meant for the babies of slaves. So thanks to this decision, we can now properly file to proceed with these numerous policies and those that have been wrongly enjoined on a nationwide basis, including birthright citizenship, ending sanctuary city funding, suspending refugee resettlement, freezing unnecessary funding, stopping federal taxpayers from paying for transgender surgeries, and numerous other priorities of the American people.
Yeah, we'll talk about that last one in a second. And I tend to agree with President Trump. I'm not in favor of just, if you're born here, you're an American, across the board, no matter the circumstances. If you've got somebody who crosses into the country illegally and they pop out some babies and now they've got an anchor baby and now they have a path to citizenship, I think what President Trump has always argued is if you don't have one parent who's a lawful permanent resident or citizen of the United States, then you don't just get birthright citizenship. And I think that's a very reasonable thing. But I also don't believe that he has, with the power of the pen, the authority to just say, I'm going to like upend birthright citizenship as it's been in place. It definitely has to be adjudicated through the courts. So we'll see what happens there. But on some of the impacts of this, some of them are going to be really important when it comes to all this DEI, LGBTQ plus nonsense that President Trump has been trying to stop in its tracks in blue states like Washington that are not so eager to just fall in line with what President Trump wants to do. So there was one case out of Maryland that I think is going to have huge implications in a state like ours from the New York Times. Justices let parents opt children out of classes with LGBTQ plus storybooks. So this case originated in Maryland. And one of the things that's interesting about it is it was brought about by a group of parents from different religious backgrounds. So Muslims and Christians, which whenever we talk about, you know, all people who are anti-LGBTQ or bigots, people always want to focus on like white conservatives and just totally ignore the fact that there is a lot of, I mean, Muslims have far stricter sort of traditional beliefs around same-sex marriage and transgenderism and all of that than a lot of Christians. And then you have a lot of Hispanic Catholics who they don't want to send their kids to school and have this stuff taught to their kids without their consent. And isn't it weird that anyone would fight a parent to the U.S. Supreme Court to say that a parent should not have the right to opt their child out of a lesson about like a book that involves pushing a gay agenda? Parents should be able to opt their kids out of whatever the hell they want to opt their kids out of. Literally anything. If you're sending your child to a public school as a parent, should you not have the right to at any moment say, my kid's not learning about that? And hell, I know that that could be a slippery slope. And maybe you're like, my child's not learning geometry. I'm really opposed to geometry. Okay, well, that's fine. But your child will probably fail the exam at the end of the year. So I don't think that that's what we're talking about here. We're talking about issues that very clearly could run afoul of a parent's deeply held religious beliefs or just their belief that, hey, I don't need my child to read books about sexual orientation in school. I'm not religious and I wouldn't want my child through the entirety of June and Pride Month. I mean, how many stories have we done on these insane, totally sexualized books about like transgenderism and LGBTQ, all that stuff, where any reasonable parent, even if they're not religious, would be like, yeah, I don't think that I want my fourth grader reading that book. And you have to take that as a parent to the Supreme Court and have the Supreme Court say, yeah, you know, a parent should be able to opt their kid out of that. So just insane. Moms for Liberty celebrating that ruling, saying, parents, you can opt out, giving one example of one of the many books that they fought to allow parents to have a right to say, not for my kid. They put out a picture of a book called Sparkle Boy. That talks about the story of like a very feminine gay boy, and that's fine. Here's the other thing, and I'm going to read this statement from the authors of these books who are angry over this ruling in a moment. Nobody's saying you can't read these books to your kids. Read the book to your kid if you want to. Take your kid to the library, the bookstore, Read it to your child at home at night, if that's really what you must do as a parent. Why do other parents, why do other parents have to be forced to have their kids read that book? Isn't that weird? Isn't that a very strange thing? So the authors, so there's a bunch of books that were listed as part of this case out of Maryland. And they're all kind of the same, like very sexualized themes around LGBTQ plus issues. Some of them fairly graphic in nature. So the authors got together and they released a statement about the Supreme Court ruling. And I want to read it in its entirety. It's not too particularly long, but I think it shows like they think this should be forced on kids. It says, as the authors and illustrators of the books named in Muhammad v. Taylor, we believe the Supreme Court's ruling today threatens students' access to diverse books and undermines teachers' efforts to create safe, inclusive classrooms. To treat children's books about LGBTQ plus characters differently than similar books about non-LGBTQ plus characters is discriminatory and harmful. This decision will inevitably lead to an increasingly hostile climate for LGBTQ plus students and families and create a less welcoming environment for all students. We created our books for all children. We believe young people need to see themselves and families like theirs in the books they read. This is especially true for LGBTQ plus children and families, and all children, emphasis on all, need to learn how to share their classroom and communities with people different from themselves. Yeah, because we're all just a bunch of bigots, and your kids are a bunch of bigots too. I added that last part. Books can help them understand one another and learn to treat each other with acceptance, kindness, and respect. We know there are families and educators across the country who are committed to creating inclusive classrooms that meet the needs of the diverse groups of students in their school districts. We are with them in spirit as they work to ensure that all students are seen and supported. We'll continue to support LGBTQ plus families and children everywhere and advocate for the right of all students to read freely. We strongly disagree with the court's decision. You can read freely. You can read freely. Every single one of the books on this list, kids can still read. Their parents can still buy. Hell, kids can even still read them at school. Teachers can even still teach them at school. This ruling didn't say those books have to be removed from classrooms and public school libraries. This ruling didn't even say that teachers can't continue to build lessons around them. All it says is a parent can decide if they want their child to be there for that lesson. And so you believe what? That every parent should be forced, even if it's against their religion, even if gay marriage is against their religion, which is against a lot of people's religions, including Muslims and Christians, that they absolutely must sit there and be forced to listen to it. It's just the most insane mentality. And the point that they're making about that you're treating these children's books about LGBTQ plus characters differently than similar books about non-LGBTQ plus characters. So, and I understand that there are a lot of books and children's books and books read to high schoolers and stuff that deal with sexual themes, right? That have like heterosexual couples in it and talk about love and relationships and all of that stuff. And that's fine, but you could opt your kid out of that too. If for some reason you want to like Romeo and Juliet, I don't like heterosexual couples. I don't want my kid, you know, to read Romeo and Juliet. Then I think you should be able to opt out of it too. I think it's kind of different because heterosexuality isn't a religious issue, right? There's no religions that are opposed to heterosexuality. So what we're talking about here is a deeply held religious belief. So it doesn't really, it's not the same thing like freedom of religion. But if you want to opt your kid out of, I don't care what it is.
But you could say the
recess.
Same thing about suicide in that Romeo and Juliet, because well, obviously that would be a religious reason to
Right. You could say, hey, they talk about suicide in that book. Mm-hmm. I think you should be able to, if you don't want your kid to be read a book about suicide, fine. If you want to close your child off to the world and only let them like do math and science at school, I think you ought to be able to do that. I really do. So it's just this insane thing where they want this LGBTQ agenda forced onto every single child in America. They want kids to question their gender. They want kids to question their sexual orientation. They want that. And that's really, and the difference is, by the way, a lot of these books are specifically about and honing in on the sexuality and experience of a trans kid or a gay kid. Like, that's what the book is about. you know, design, kind of normalizing it and making it more accepting and tolerant and all of these things, which, again, I'm not saying there's not a place for those books in society if you want your child to read it, whatever it is. But that's very different from like a classic novel where there's some sexuality in it, but that's not the driver of it, right? It's just weird stuff. This whole idea that we've got to force this sexuality on other people's kids. And if other people don't want their kids to read these books, they're hateful bigots. So this is a great ruling from the U.S. Supreme Court. I think it's going to find its tentacles to Washington State. Actually, tentacles isn't the right word, because tentacles I use when something's bad. This is very good. I think it will eventually grace us in Washington State. So parents everywhere can opt their kid out of having to be exposed to this kind of content in school, whether it is for a religious reason or a different reason entirely. All right, coming up next in our segment, Unbelievable, we're going to continue on our conversation about Pride Month and Pride Month festivities. First, I've talked about our friend Wes Jones at sellwithwes.com. Sellwithwes.com, if you're in the market to sell your home, reach out to Wes Jones of sellwithwes.com. He will make sure that he gives you a free market analysis so you know how much your home is worth. You can kind of anticipate how your home will perform on the market. And then he'll talk to you about his strategies. He might come in and say, hey, we need to make some cosmetic upgrades to your home, but don't worry. I think we can definitely get the money back on the back end. And he'll kind of take you through that, get your feedback. And these are the projects that he really loves, is coming in, managing the contractors. He can even help make sure that you don't have to pay for it until closing, which is another big stress reliever, I think, when you're trying to sell your home is, God, I got to make these cosmetic upgrades, or, you know, upgrade my kitchen. I'm going to have to come out of pocket for that and then wait for the house to sell before I'll recuperate any of that money. Not with Wes Jones. So make sure you ask about their listing boost concierge service. Sellwithwes.com, sellwithwes.com. It is simply a better way to sell your home. All right. It's almost July. So today is the final day of Pride Month. Oh, We've almost made it. But of course, the last weekend of the month of June is typically when the major Pride celebrations are held. And as usual, there was a lot of stunning public displays of debauchery. Let's talk about it in our segment, Unbelievable. Oh, God. Yes, I do have to talk about this because we just continue. And look, I used to attend pride parades all the time. A pride parade doesn't bother me. But when you start to expose yourself around children, make it this sexual, about like public displays of sexuality and about adult sexual debauchery, then to me, you totally lose me. And I've seen some crazy things at pride parades. And then you've got parents that bring out their kids. And honestly, I don't know at this point who I blame more. The parents who bring their kids or the adults who think it's fine to walk down Main Street in a major city with a hard on. It's just absolutely insane. And this is the kind of stuff that I think is pushing more people away from being sort of allies, so to speak. I mean, I'll always be an ally to the gay community. But then when you're adding on to the alphabet all these different things and, oh, you've got to be accepting of this. Oh, if you're going to be an ally, you have to be accepting of me wearing a ball gag and smacking another guy's ass on a pride parade float, which I've seen. Oh, in order to be an ally, you have to be perfectly fine with 100 naked bicyclists rolling down the pride route in front of children. It's like, no, I don't, okay? No, I don't. So I think these are the kind of things that are going to ultimately be the downfall of these Pride months. And you already see corporate sponsors pulling a lot of money from Pride celebrations. And, you know, the Pride people want to blame, oh, they're bigots, or they're, you know, caving to Donald Trump, or they don't want to get on the wrong side of Donald Trump. No, I think it's because, honestly, they see how crazy some of this Pride stuff is becoming. Our friend Ari, known as at Transphobe01, the detransitioner we've had on the show, went to Trans Pride in Seattle. This is at Volunteer Park. Butt-ass naked dude. I mean, we probably should have blacked out a little bit of the butt there. It's pretty out there. Just, I don't want to look at that. But Ari did black out the crying child that was 2 feet away from this dude's bare butt. And since it's bare in the back, you can imagine it's probably bare in the front, too. Why do you need to walk around like that to celebrate pride? It's absolutely disgusting. I fail to understand it. Now, it gets even worse. So it was posted by Jonathan Cho, but the video was taken by a street preacher named Matthew Meineke, which you've probably seen him around. He holds those big signs and stuff. So he was watching this drag queen show on a stage in Capitol Hill. And this is another one. I was like, should I blurt it out? Just content warning. So you'll see for people who are just listening, I'll describe it first. You see the drag queen repeatedly sort of bend over, and then the drag queen behind them has a long sex toy and proceeds to go ahead.
This is illegal, by the way. What they're doing here is illegal. This is derogatory on every level of humanity. This is so central, what they're doing right now. I don't even need to describe in detail happening in
what's
this video. I think you guys get it.
Oh my God. That's outside, on a stage, in public. You want to do that behind closed doors? By all means. You want to do that in some like club and a drag show and adults are in there? By all means. But you're outside in a public area and you do have to have admission to get in, but you're telling me all the buildings around that no one else and children can't see into what you're doing? Just crazy stuff. Nicole, before I play this next video, is everything blurred in it? Okay. So this is not just Seattle, obviously, not just a Seattle issue. This is Pride in Toronto, where you've got people just marching totally naked, kids everywhere. And why are they bouncing like that? Why are those people, those dudes, a little bounce to their walk? Seriously, this is how, the debauchery, it's like, I thought we were talking about love is love. Right? I don't care if you want to marry another dude, but why do you have to strut down Main Street with your ding-a-ling hanging out around kids? You just feed into the whole, you know, narrative on social media that you're just a bunch of pedophiles. Why do you have to do that? And why do cities allow it? Because this has happened in Seattle too, where there's full-blown nudity. And Seattle police are said, well, technically it's not against the law. Unless you're performing some sort of act of like sexual gratification or the context of it matters, it should be against the law. It should be against the law. It's in a public place, all of our tax money. You're closing down a public street to let adults walk naked? Some of them in their BDS. What is going on? This has to be the last year that we allow this. This has to be the last year that we allow this. And it's not even just for Pride Parade. The Summer Solstice Parade in Seattle? Where you've got hundreds, if not 1,000, naked bicyclists? The things I've seen at that. And children everywhere, children riding their bikes in the parade? Why? Why do we allow that? Why is there not a law against that? Do I have to keep going? I guess. Pride San Francisco. Completely naked people. Well, that guy's not completely naked. He has a furry mask on, Nicole.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, he's got a dog mask on.
Yeah. It's got a little coverage.
And here, right by an adult pushing a child in a stroller. And I blame that adult too. Okay, let's get off of that. You know what you're getting. It's even worse for the adults that bring their kids. Let this be the last year that we tolerate public nudity, sexual debauchery in public spaces for Pride Month. And I actually think the organizers of Pride, if the concept is, hey, you know, love is love and we support gay marriage and all this stuff, inclusion and acceptance, this is going to lead you to the exact opposite. You're going to be not only back to where you started, but even worse off. And you're worried, you know, we read that statement from those authors. Just really quick, I got to reread a part of it. Where they said they think that rulings like that SCOTUS ruling will create an increasingly hostile climate for LGBTQ plus people. This is the kind of stuff that creates an increasingly hostile climate for LGBTQ plus people. Because you've made it so insane that reasonable people can't get behind it anymore. I used to love the Pride Parade. Maybe that's before I got red-pilled about it. But I would still love to go to a good pride parade. I love a good drag show. I love a good drag show. I love a good gay bar. Cuff on Capitol Hill. Been there a few times. Those are adults in a closed setting. IDs at the door. Imbibing in beverages. Doing what they want to do. It doesn't bother me one bit. You bring it out into public spaces, it should be illegal instantly. And there should be some standards. And it's even more disgusting when you consider, like, Seattle Police Department for years has marched in the main Pride Parade. And they have their little pride car or whatever it is. So now we've got the police marching in the parade. We're a few floats back. It's the dudes dressed in BDSM and ball gags spanking each other. Totally normalized. What on earth? I also want to, this is kind of a separate story, so let's give it a separate unbelievable. We might have three unbelievables today. Unbelievable. Talking about pride hypocrisy here. So the Eugene Weekly, which is like Seattle's The Stranger, so it's like the far left rag alternative weekly down in Eugene, Oregon. This was the front page for this latest edition. Has a picture of a trans person holding an AR-15 rifle. It says, "Are you triggered?" The subhead, "As the Trump administration attacks trans people, some queer folks are armed and ready to bash back." So I saw that and I at first was like, that can't be real. But it is real. So of course, there's two main issues with this, and I'll read some of the excerpts from it. The one is the glaring hypocrisy on weapons of war. I thought those were weapons of war. But now you think trans people need to defend themselves? Oh, wait a second. So you think trans people should be able to have AR-15s to defend themselves, you say? But it's just fine to have an AR-15, but you have to be of our political orientation and you have to want to use the AR-15 to shoot someone who doesn't agree with you. Then they're okay. Gotcha. Okay. I'm starting to understand the thought process. But that subhead, "As the Trump administration attacks trans people, some queer folks are armed and ready to bash back." Because if it was just a trans person, like, lawfully exercising their Second Amendment rights, I'd be like, good for you, man, woman, whatever, good for you. But that's clearly not what this is insinuating. "As the Trump administration attacks trans people," they don't mean physically, they mean, you know, with policies, "we're arming ourselves with AR-15s and we're ready to bash back." That sounds an awful lot like incitement to violence to me, does it not? That's just basically them saying on the front page of Eugene Weekly, like, it's okay to arm yourself with rifles and shoot people who agree with the president, or maybe who are the president. It's insane. Let's read from the article. "Why do you own a gun? My answer to that frequent question is always this, because I feel that I have to. Being a transgender woman today can be scary, especially with the current presidential administration and its crackdown on transgender rights. I pray that I'll never have to use my weapon in self-defense, but I am prepared to do so to save my life or the life of someone else." And again, I have no issue with that. Everyone should be able to own a firearm in defense of themselves. And if there's some crazy nut job who wants to attack you physically because you're transgender, you have every right to defend yourself, mister, ma'am, mister. Every right in the world to defend yourself. That's not what I have an issue with at all. And then it gets into these FBI hate crime statistics, which we don't have to go through because I think hate crime statistics are totally manufactured. Goes on to say, there's a saying I hear a lot from the armed queer community, and that is, you go far enough left, you get your guns back. From pistols to AR-15s and AK-47s, queers are learning to bash back, protecting themselves from surging levels of violence and political hatred. Which, again, you can protect yourself from violence, but political hatred is not something you have a lawful right to protect yourself from, just people not liking the fact that you're transgender. It says, guns can be scary, but they don't have to be. I've learned a lot since I've started shooting, and there's still more to learn. Becoming a queer person that's comfortable with guns can open a door to a community you never knew existed, one that's queer, left-leaning, and progressive. Okay, so are you not going to ban guns anymore? Are they not interested in banning our guns anymore? Because if that's the outcome, like, that's cool. I support that. But this whole, and I go back to, totally fine. If a trans person wants to own a firearm and use it only in lawful self-defense, I don't know, why would I have a problem with that? But when it's couched in the headline saying, as the Trump administration attacks trans people, some queer folks are armed and ready to bash back, that doesn't sound like you're eager for self-defense. That sounds like you're eager to shoot some Trump supporters. It's particularly concerning considering previous rhetoric around this issue. Do you remember when Riley Gaines came to the University of Washington? The flyers that Trantifa was putting up all around. Protect the dolls, protect the boys, protect trans youth by any means necessary. With pictures of guns. So you're going to protect trans youth from what Riley Gaines, by any means necessary, which I took as a direct threat of physical harm to Riley Gaines, because she doesn't support boys competing in girls' sports. That's her main belief on the transgender issue. And they're threatening what? To use deadly force against her for that belief? So I'm very startled by this. You have a group of people that I do think is struggling with clearly some mental health issues, arming themselves, and arming themselves with the intention of bashing back against the Trump administration. Having already threatened people on the right who don't believe kids should be subjected to gender surgical interventions and mutilation, who don't believe boys should compete against girls' sports. All of this to me sounds an awful lot like a wink, wink, nudge, nudge call to arm yourselves into violence against the right. Absolutely terrifying stuff. All right, let's do it. Why not? Triple dose of unbelievable. Boop! This might be my favorite story of June so far. Of all of June. It's good. All right, this is from our friend Jason Rance at MyNorthwest.com. Apparently giving black people parking tickets on Juneteenth, it's racist. Absolutely racist. Seattle activists say parking tickets for blocking the bus lane and a fire hydrant on Juneteenth are racist. Activists held a Juneteenth event at Jimi Hendrix Park that reportedly attracted over 8,500 people, according to organizer Anthony Tibbs. But the celebration, for some, was apparently incomplete without the God-given right to park wherever they pleased. After parking enforcement did what it's supposed to do, enforce the law, and ticketed illegally parked cars in a residential neighborhood, the predictable screeches of racism began. In the end, there were only 12 citations written. Parking enforcement officers mostly offered verbal warnings, but in the woke logic of Seattle activism, holding people accountable for their actions is a mishap or an issue of disparity. Okay? Arguably, the most absurd reaction came from former state representative Dawn Mason. The Seattle Medium claimed she was, quote, speaking on behalf of Seattle's black community. Who knew, he says, the entire community had a spokesperson. Mason said she, quote, appealed to Chief Barnes to have all the tickets voided and publicly apologize to the African community for this insult. So this state, former state representative, said that tickets that were given for, in one case, blocking a bus zone, in another case, blocking a fire hydrant, even though 8,500 people came, only 12 citations were issued, and the Seattle Police Department says they gave an awful lot of verbal warnings. They say that this is an issue of disparity, and the chief of the Seattle Police Department should have all the tickets voided and should publicly apologize to the African-American community for this insult of ticketing them for, you know, blocking fire hydrants. But this doesn't surprise me. It doesn't surprise me. You have this group of people that's been catered to, that's been told repeatedly they're victims, where there have been laws passed carving out free things for them, where they're treated, it's not equality, special treatment. They get special treatment above and beyond everyone else. They get the cost of their home down payments covered for. Why would they not think that they could come out and park in front of a bus stop? Why would they not think that they could come out and park in front of a fire hydrant? Why would they not think that if they got a ticket, they could cry racism and get the ticket revoked? And after everything we've learned about Seattle's new police chief, I tend to think he probably will come out and apologize. I tend to think he probably will order the police department to have all the tickets voided. And you know what will happen, or what should happen, if he does that? Every single person who's ever been given a parking ticket in the city of Seattle should immediately sue the city for discrimination. Anyone who's ever got a ticket, which is a hefty fine, by the way, for blocking a bus path, a bus stop, for parking in front of a fire hydrant, every single person who that's happened to would have to sue the city. And you'd win. Because it's special treatment for people who were attending a Juneteenth event. But if you're just a regular old white person who just decided to block, I don't know, park weird, you get a ticket. Just crazy stuff. It's racist. It's an insult. It's an insult. Unbelievable. All right, coming up next, we have more on the saga to try to get to the bottom of why Governor Bob Ferguson defunded a pediatric care facility that helps drug-addicted babies survive. We'll have that. First, our friend Zach Abraham with Bulwark Capital is the guy to go to if you need a second opinion on your retirement portfolio. This is what Zach and his team specialize in. If you're worried about tariffs, if you're worried about what's happening internationally and how it might impact the markets here, if you're worried about the composition of your retirement portfolio, whether it's properly protected against risk or not, Zach Abraham and his team at Bulwark Capital specialize in risk management, and they can be there to give you a second opinion. And really, maybe that's all it is. Maybe he takes a look at it and says, actually, you're doing pretty good. It looks like your retirement portfolio survived some of these market ups and downs fairly well, relatively unscathed. And then he'll sort of just send you on your way. But I think getting a second opinion on something as important as your retirement, there really is no downside to it. So sign up for their free portfolio review at knowyourriskpodcast.com. Knowyourriskpodcast.com. Don't delay. Knowyourriskpodcast.com. Okay, so we have been tracking what's been happening with the decision of Governor Bob Ferguson to defund entirely a pediatric care facility in Kent, Washington that specializes in taking care of newborns that are born drug addicted. Now, the reasons and the rationale given by Bob Ferguson, the governor's office, and Democrats so far as to why this facility has been defunded are not holding water. They don't make any sense. And a lot of them have been debunked. So what is the real reason? This segment is brought to you in partnership with our friends over at Future 42. Turn your frustration into action at future42.org. Make sure to sign up for their newsletter to be alerted to opportunities to do just that. So there is growing pressure, I will say, on Democrats and Bob Ferguson to make this right, to make sure that there is money that is still in place to go to PIC, which is the Pediatric Interim Care Center. Been around for a long time. Travis Couture, who's a state representative, very passionate about these issues. I love that the Seattle Times published an editorial from him on this. It says, a victim of Governor Ferguson's veto, Kent Center for Babies Exposed to Drugs. Representative Couture went on to write, PIC's policies aren't to punish parents, they are to protect babies. But DCYF is the one that's changed. Since its formation in 2017, and especially after the 2021 Keeping Families Together Act, the department has embraced a rigid ideology that prioritizes reunification at almost any cost, even when parents are actively using meth or fentanyl. This ideology has fueled a tripling of child deaths and near deaths in the first quarter of 2025 compared to the same period last year, all over half due to fentanyl. If PIC closes, these infants will be sent to overstimulating hospitals at 10 times the cost, or worse, placed back in the homes where substances are used. He went on to write, the only thing required here is leadership. Specifically, Governor Ferguson and the Department of Children, Youth, and Families Secretary Tana Sen must reinstate the PIC's contract. That alone would give us time to regroup, to find solutions, to do right by the scores of babies still being born into addiction in this state. If PIC closes today on Monday, which is when it's scheduled to close, let the record show it was not for lack of care, not for lack of need, not for lack of donors, and certainly not for lack of love. It was because of one man's veto, one agency's silence, and a failure of conscience at the highest levels of state government. Very well said. And I am happy to see that the pressure is mounting on this. I worry it's a little too late. As you guys know, the budget, initially this was all blamed on the budget deficit, that they had to just make some tough decisions. But we immediately called BS on that. That just wasn't true. Because ultimately, all the legislature sent to Bob Ferguson's desk is $100,000 to keep funding PIC so that they could continue to have a contract with the State Department of Children, Youth, and Families. And they could make up, they were getting $700,000 a year. Look, there was a big budget deficit. So they were okay with their funding being slashed because they really felt like they could make up for it with private donations. But if they don't have a contract with DCYF, then they're not getting babies sent to them. So then the donations are for what? Are for nothing. Then the center would have to close down. And the reason we called BS on it being a budgetary argument, and is there, first of all, $100,000 is a blip, it's a rounding error in the state budget. And also, there are other clearly less essential things that the state continues to fund today that obviously don't take precedent over drug addicted babies. So it's very clear that this is an ideological issue that's driven by the Keeping Families Together Act and the belief among a large segment of Democratic lawmakers that the right thing to do is just to allow drug addicted parents to have custody of their kids, which we already know is having deadly consequences. Travis Couture mentioned it in that editorial with the Seattle Times, but DCYF new numbers just came out. We could triple the number of dead babies on the state watch this year. Triple. We're on track to triple the number of babies who have died under the watchful eye of the Department of Children, Youth, and Families. And the timing is not a coincidence. It coincides with the passing of the Keeping Families Together Act, this decision that it's not imminent harm to be using fentanyl, one of the deadliest street drugs in existence known to man, around a little tiny baby. That's not imminent harm that would require a judge to take that child out of the parent's care. So the last 3 years, Democrats have been pushing towards this environment where, no, it's cruel and unusual. Even if a parent is struggling with fentanyl abuse, so much so their baby's born addicted to fentanyl, it's cruel and unusual to take that child out of that environment until the parent is better and the child is better. So we wonder why there's an increase in deaths, and we wonder why they are now suddenly making the decision to defund a facility that's run by a woman who has been critical publicly of the Keeping Families Together Act. You see what's happening here? I think it's all pretty obvious. On Sundays with Subscribers, we had State Representative Michelle Caldeer on the show, and we asked her sort of, okay, what is the path forward to try to right this wrong?
So what's the next step in trying to actually figure it out?
So the next step is we're touring, and I've got Republicans and Democrat legislators who are coming to tour.
Oh, great. I'm glad.
And, I invited the governor's office to come. They said they may not be able to, but my whole thing is that, you know, you have to do your due diligence. Mm-hmm. And any facility that I was advocating to close, I would at least want to physically be there.
Right.
And or somebody from his office. And because to me, when you get rid of a program or when you get rid of a facility, you have to do measure twice and cut once, mm-hmm. because there is a ricochet effect. So in the event that we close this facility and we get a spike in cases and, Mary Bridge and Seattle Children's can't handle it, then that backs up everything else so that other kids can't get the treatment that they need,
yeah.
right? And it's my understanding from talking to some of the hospital folks that they don't even like taking in these kids because they're so labor intensive. Mm. And, because you have to hold these babies a lot, and it's like one-on-one. Mm-hmm. It's not like you can hold six babies at a time, right?
Yeah.
Like, and they need staff for other things. So I want to get down to the bottom of it. It's not confusing to me that I will need bipartisan support to try to figure out if there's a workaround or if they're dead set on closing it.
Yeah.
I have not given up hope yet. And I look at, they were planning on closing Rainier and Yakima Valley schools for the developmentally disabled. That was another one of their proposed budget cuts.
Yeah.
We were able to keep the facility open just because there was no placement, for any of the people. I think they only had like 12 placements for those two homes.
Yeah.
And people were dying as they were moving them out.
Wow.
And so
no thinking ahead, no like planning.
I know.
Yeah.
It's just like, oh, this was a recommendation, so we're going to go through with the recommendation. And I've seen it before where when someone doesn't like someone or they've got it out for an agency or something like that, it's the rumor mill that starts.
Mm.
And I hope that's not it.
Yeah.
But if it was something tangible, like a safety issue, mm-hmm. I think that would have been brought up and I would have been okay with that.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. And they have to me, the inability to articulate a factual reason is very troublesome. And that
right.
does lead you to believe that it's some sort of political issue at play.
Correct.
Which we're talking about babies that are, it shouldn't factor into it.
Yeah, we shouldn't have any sort of even suspicion that it was over political disagreements about how these, as Michelle said, if it was a safety issue for kids, if the facility wasn't living up to its obligations, totally different. But there aren't complaints like that coming forward. So now we have a situation where you're not even telling us the truth. You've lied multiple times very clearly from the governor's office and Democrats about what's happening in this instance. If you feel like there's a justifiable reason at a time of great need, when more babies are being born into drug addiction, not less, if you can't articulate the justifiable reason to take funding away, then what are we doing here? We're talking about babies. We're talking about babies' lives. And I should be clear, it's not really even about the funding to me. Because I really think, just like that, we could make up all the money. You can make up the $700,000 plus some if the state chose to take the funding away. 100%. I'm all for, I'm all for funding stuff privately when we can and when it makes sense. The issue, though, is without the funding, they don't have a DCYF contract. Without a DCYF contract, there's no babies that are going to be sent to them. So that's the issue I have, is reinstate the contract. Make it a dollar. If you have to have a monetary figure attached to the contract, make it $1. And then others, we will make sure that the funding is in place so they can continue to operate until we can, dig ourselves out of this budget deficit or whatever it is. Or maybe they just always operate on private funds moving forward. But make the budget $1 so they can have a DCYF contract, at least until we sort this out, as Representative Caldier pointed out. Like, you're going to cut this facility that's been doing this work for years and years and years at a time of great need. Let's at least give it some thought. Let's not do it and then leave everyone scrambling, wondering what the hell just happened. Like, let's at least do this, approach this as a good, responsible governor would, and ask some questions. It doesn't even seem like the governor's staff knows what happened here. Absolutely outrageous. You can watch that full interview we did with Representative Caldier on Sundays with subscribers. If you're not a subscriber, you can sign up right now, undividedpod.com. undividedpod.com, and just click on the banner that says support the show. That segment was brought to you in partnership with our friends over at Future 42. Turn your frustration into action at future42.org. Make sure you sign up for their newsletter to be alerted to opportunities to do just that. All right, coming up next to National, we're going to take you down to Portland, where some residents have had enough of Antifa's all night rioting outside the ICE facility. Some of this video of a confrontation between a Portland resident and Antifa is absolutely awesome. I love this person. First, we keep getting great feedback from undivided viewers and listeners who have taken the First Mark Challenge. From Daryl, he says, "Hi, Brandy and Nicole. I'm a retired law enforcement officer from Washington. My wife and I are traveling the U.S. in our fifth wheel full time. We still own a house. My mom's in Washington. I listen to you every day. Finally took the First Mark Challenge. Our current insurance expires in a couple months. In the last 2 years, it has gone up every year a lot. So I called First Mark. I got a call back from Joe, who took the time to not only explain my options, but went back and found a better and more tailored quote for what we needed on the trailer. We talked for over an hour. In the end, they saved us over $400 from our current insurance, which I am sure would have gone up even more at the renewal date. I told them where we heard about them, and now my daughter is calling them for her home and auto. Thank you guys for the advice." Well, you're welcome, Daryl. And you know what? If we can save our viewers and listeners some cash, especially as taxes go up tomorrow, we're going to do that. So take the First Mark Challenge today. Do what Daryl and so many other undivided viewers and listeners have done. FirstMarkInsurance.com. FirstMarkInsurance.com. The very best part is they work for you, not the insurance company. Okay, so for weeks on end, Antifa has been riding outside the ICE facility in Portland. And there's been some arrests. The feds have charged federally some of these Antifa goons with serious crimes. We showed the video last week of the guy who threw a machete at ICE agents, was tased, did a face plant, and now is facing some pretty serious federal charges. But the city of Portland has not cracked down on this. So ICE and DHS and Federal Protective Services, they can, come out and protect the building and all of that. But once these Antifa rioters are on city sidewalks, gathering in a city-owned area outside of the building, that comes down to the city of Portland and to the Portland Police Department stopping what has been weeks on end of unrest and, for the residents in that area, a lot of unhinged, sleepless nights. So this video is awesome. I love this person. So there's this woman who lives kitty corner from the ICE facility in an apartment complex, and every single night has been dealing with loud noises from the rioters, screaming, noisemakers, sirens from these bullhorns that the rioters, chanting, and she's losing her mind. And she's had enough. So she went out to confront Antifa directly.
Turn that shit down! It's midnight! I will turn it down. I would love to. You just have to ask my, and I'm being nice even though you're screaming at me.
You!
I'll turn it down.
Every night I'm destroying and wrecking your shit. Turn it down. We the people need sleep.
We the people need sleep. And I love that it's a black woman too. Because you know these same Antifa goons were probably out in the summer of 2020. Oh, Black Lives Matter, Black Lives Matter. And then a black woman comes over and says, does my life, you know, what about me? I haven't slept. I need sleep. And that guy with like a bra on or whatever that is, some sort of bondage. We'll turn it down. You just have to ask nice. You're not being very nice. We're being nice. No, you're not being nice. You're riding outside her window for nights on end, screaming into your loudspeaker. So she comes out and she's telling them, I cannot sleep. This is ridiculous. And as she walks away, they taunt her by starting to chant.
Hey, I'm sleeping.
Hey, guys, let's
you are?
Who do you think you are? Amen. Unreal. 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 She comes in, I can't sleep, and she's clearly mad. I get it. I would be mad too. And they push her away, don't listen to her, start taunting her, ice out of Portland, with her chants as she walks back to her apartment to try to sleep, hasn't been able to sleep in nights. And then our friend Gady Davis-Cord, who's down there covering it. So I'm going to give you a warning. These sounds are insane, okay? So if you're driving or if you're triggered by loud screeching sounds, I'm going to give you 1 second here just to turn the audio down for the next like 30 seconds or so. So do that. So she walks away and they immediately double down. And all these noises you are going to hear right now are coming from sound machines from the rioters. Listen. Absolutely insane. So that's what this woman is hearing. Night after night after night, she lives across the street. She's been posting videos. Here's a couple of them of what it sounds like from inside her apartment. Oh my God. Every night. She has to sue the city. Sue the city today. Because what are you paying taxes for? That's been happening for weeks. She can't sleep. I thought Black Lives Matter. Absolutely insane. And here's the kicker. I think she's a lefty. Or somewhere in there, but not anymore. And like, I don't know for sure her politics, but based on like posts before this stuff started happening, I feel like she's being red-pilled in real time. Mm-hmm. She posted this for a X handle, if you want to follow her, is at Numerarch. N-U-M-E-R, arch. Not one left-wing person, not one self-described Democrat has shown support for me or my community. Only those from the so-called right wing have stepped up, spoken out, and shown generosity. It is profoundly eye-opening. So here's this woman in Portland, kept up by Antifa night after night. Portland police won't do anything about it. Neither will any self-professed left-wingers, Democrats. No one will even show sympathy to her. Despite the fact that what she's going through is clearly unacceptable. And now we're watching a red pilling in real time. That's how it happens, ladies and gentlemen. So if there's one positive out of the ordeal, it's maybe we're going to start to red pill some people in these deep blue places like Portland and Seattle, where this is happening night after night after night. We got to try to get that woman on the show. I think she'd be a great guest, and just horrible what's happening. Sue the city of Portland. Sue the city of Portland. If you won't need help finding an attorney, we'll put out an all call to find you an attorney who'll do it pro bono. Sue the city of Portland. Unbelievable. All right, so we've been talking about Zohran Mamdani, the socialist who is the favorite to become the next mayor of New York City. And look, this guy has a long list of extremist policies that are just socialist. I mean, he can call himself a democratic socialist, but he's just a socialist, right? But just like this,
CNN and the media already trying to cover for him, already trying to make it sound like far, far fringe socialist policies are totally normal. And it's wild to watch it happen in real time. So Omar Jimenez is a host on CNN. But you'll probably remember him because he's the reporter who is in Minneapolis covering the George Floyd riots. And the now famous chyron was beneath him that said fiery but mostly peaceful. While behind Omar Jimenez was this wall, literal wall of flame. So, you know, I already kind of know that he's hopelessly biased. But he was having a panel, one Democrat, one Republican, and was talking about the fact that, and it's Scott Jennings is the Republican on the panel, and you just see the look in Scott's face, trying to, Omar Jimenez, who we're supposed to believe is a news host, trying to excuse or lessen previous statements that Zohran Mamdani said about the police and defunding the police.
I got to leave there.
Nobody's going to be able to walk Manhattan after he defunds the New York City Police Department, Marie. I wouldn't advise walking Manhattan after he gets rid of the police force.
Just to jump in, Mamdani, hold on.
Oh, he doesn't want to do
that. Mamdani advocated for defunding NYPD in 2020. He's since said his goal is reform, not defunding.
Exactly.
And then also,
you guys are doing that again. It's the whole Harris playbook.
One more thing, point of order. He just said he didn't want to tax white people specifically, just higher income neighborhoods that do happen to be majority white.
He literally wrote it in his statement, Omar. He literally wrote it down.
I'm saying that he said that, but not on the basis of race specifically. I'm not saying he didn't say that.
That's right.
He did say that,
okay,
but not on the basis of race specifically.
he literally did say that he wanted to shift the tax burden from overtaxed homeowners in the outer boroughs to more expensive homes in richer and wider boroughs. He literally did say he wants to tax white people more. And because he's all of a sudden shifted his defunding the police, he said grotesque things about the police in 2020. And now all of a sudden we have to forget about it because he says he's moved on from that position. And CNN is the one, that is an in-kind donation from CNN. It sounds like Omar Jimenez is the Democrat or the socialist on the panel who's advocating for the candidate. It's like, no, he still has to own his policy from 5 years ago. A policy that has led to a decrease in public safety in cities like New York and Seattle that pursued the defund the police policy. And it wasn't just that Mamdani came out and said he wanted to defund the police. Like, he said the most vicious, vile things about the police. And now he just gets to walk away from it because CNN wants to act like it's not a big deal and play cover for him. Insane. And then here's Jake Tapper. As he's talking about, so Mayor Eric Adams was on with Jake Tapper. And Mayor Eric Adams is now the only hope to not get this crazy socialist. And he's bringing up the real praise that Mamdani has had for Hamas, and including things he said the day after the October 7th attacks, which were all about Israel bad and not Hamas bad. Here's a clip.
I want to turn to your likely Democratic challenger, Mamdani, because you said recently that the Jewish community in New York should be concerned about him. You've accused him of using anti-Semitic rhetoric. What specifically has Mamdani said that you think is anti-Semitic?
Pro-Hamas. Hamas is a dangerous terrorist organization that should be destroyed. When you embrace the philosophies of Hamas, not only what they do to their own people, but what they did in Gaza to lift them up and praise them, I think that's a clear indicator that something is wrong with that. But he has
when did he praise Hamas? I don't recall him ever praising Hamas.
There's several videos, even during his days of being a rap artist, of praising Hamas and other terrorist groups. And so a little research, you'll be able to find it. But I'm not competing against him only for what he's done and praising Hamas. I'm competing against him because this is not a socialist city. And that much of what he's promising the people, which I think is really deplorable.
Yeah, you can
people
stop that there. Are struggling, I don't listen to like my that. So he did praise Hamas, and you can argue with the phrase praise, but for Jake Tapper, who, you haven't learned anything from your Biden ordeal? The original sin book, oh, how the media missed Biden's mental decline? His next book is going to be Second Sin, how the media missed Zohan Mamdani's extremism. It's because you don't care to look. You don't care to tell the truth, and he has. There are reasonable people who would characterize his past statements as praising Hamas.
And Jake Tapper, well, I don't recall him ever praising Hamas. It's just like, you haven't looked. You don't care to look. Absolutely insane. Then here's the real kicker. CNN. Zohran Mamdani, the favorite to win New York City's next to be New York City's next mayor after winning the Democratic primary, has a contentious plan to create a network of city-owned grocery stores. But it's less radical than critics portray, some food policy and grocery industry experts say. So they went out and found experts to tell them that bread lines aren't radical. One of the most like radical socialist ideas is the government controlling the food supply. And CNN goes out and cherry picks experts to say that that's not a radical idea at all. In case it's not already clear, CNN is completely lost. Absolutely lost. I don't even know what to say to that. All right, I want to ask you guys about Travis Decker. Because I was reminded of it in Idaho. I talked about, oh my gosh, the incident in Idaho. I thought, well, maybe that's Decker. It turned out not to be. But, you know, I've been having this debate in my household as well. Is Travis Decker even still alive? Is there still cause to be out there proactively searching for him? I see more and more people kind of thinking that maybe Travis Decker is deceased. So I asked subscribers in our daily subscriber show poll on Patreon, Locals and X. So this is the fifth week now. It'll be 1 month on Wednesday of when Travis Decker is accused of murdering his three daughters. So I asked, what level of resources do you believe law enforcement should continue to dedicate to the search? Should they maintain a proactive search? Should they only respond to credible leads, or should they be dedicating very little resources to it because he's likely deceased? Nicole, what do you say?
I'm probably going to say little resources.
Okay.
But I think we should be on the lookout.
Right, like because if there's a credible sighting, like if you've got a game camera of him, of course, right. Respond to that location, then maybe readjust.
Well, and because I feel like at this point, you cannot survive out there without food, water, and probably fire, if anything. If you're going out there without any food or water, then you at least have to have a fire to purify water or cook some food, right?
Yeah.
So I don't think he's out there either alive or he had some escape plan and he's not out there in this area, right? Mm-hmm. So to me, you're on the lookout nationwide, put a bolo out, but yeah. I don't know how you survive out there without any trace of fire or any trace of food supply.
Yeah, I mean, I think you have to assume he's alive until you have proof that he's dead, right? And sure. Especially because the crime is so severe and horrible. Mm-hmm. And I don't want to ever suggest that we shouldn't be looking for a guy that did something so awful. Mm-hmm. I do believe clearly he continues to pose a yeah. threat to public safety. So I think the only logical thing is if we get a credible lead, mm-hmm. we'll follow up on the credible lead. But in a county like in those counties, so Chelan, Kittitas, you don't have the resources mm-hmm. to be able to continue to put birds in the air and boots on the ground and all of that stuff. So I hate to say that, but I don't think it can be a proactive search anymore. I mean, you know, if his body's out there, you want to find his body. I don't know. I tend to think at this point, I didn't believe this up until a few days ago, but I tend to think he's deceased. But I think you only respond to credible leads. Credible, yeah. Verified sightings. Not somebody who's like, I saw a dude who... No, I didn't get a good look at him. It's like, okay, well, it's probably just a hiker. 58% of you saying only respond to credible leads.
Also, part of me thinks that if he was planning to live, he would have taken his dog. Because apparently he had this attachment to the dog and he left the dog at the campsite.
And the dog is alive.
Was alive, yeah. But I think that if he was planning to, you know, survive, he might have taken the dog.
But then the dog's another mouse to feed. The dog can bark, and I don't think he would have taken the dog.
Maybe. But I think he had a plan for escape. Why would you just stay in the woods, right, where you're just there to be found? So,
yeah, 40% of people saying it should continue to be a proactive search. Bob says, dead or alive, this guy needs to be found for peace of mind of everyone involved. And I can't even imagine. I mean, for the mother, the fear, really. I mean, every day not knowing where he is and what he could do. Randy says, I don't think a full court press is warranted, but if he's alive, there should be a small team following up on leads and expanding the search outside of Washington via digital methods. After 5 weeks, he could be anywhere. E says, credible leads only. He's a survivalist and probably not in the U.S. anymore. He's too much of a coward to be dead. Yeah, because it's also like, if you wanted to kill yourself, why don't you do it before you killed your daughters? Just insane. Mm-hmm. Old school sci-fi nerd says, credible leads, too much else our police have to do. Corin Taylor, he's too well trained to survive He's well-trained to survive and evade capture. If he's still on the run, he's well ahead of law enforcement. And if he's dead, he still needs to be found. He's clearly a threat to any community. And knowing if he's dead or alive would put lots of people at ease. And that is true. Like, I don't live in the area where the search has been happening. Mm-hmm. So maybe people who live out there feel a little bit differently about, you know, not wanting him to show up on their back deck someday. So maybe it depends how close you are to the situation. Oh, here it is. Nicole says, I live in the area, so of course I want them to check on leads, but I'm pretty sure he's deceased. Just a crazy situation that it's already been a month. I mean, a month has already gone by since that search began. So wild stuff.
That's crazy.
All right, we'll get to some comments from the live stream today on the new laws taking effect tomorrow. Why on Patreon says, Washington State is making it increasingly difficult to let our children have wonderful summer experiences without going into huge debt. Yep. I mean, gas is going to be crazy. And the 6 cents a gallon is just the beginning of it. I mean, the CCA is going to continue to drive gas prices up. Things are going to get absolutely nuts. All right. On the winds from SCOTUS, Moon Goddess. I like that. Moon Goddess. Thanking the good Lord, my kids are grown up now and not in school anymore. If they were in school today, I would definitely be in jail tonight. Oh, gosh. Okay. Opt out. Opt out. Don't resort to violence. Matthew Cook, a $5 super chat. Will districts track the opt-outs? If majority of classes opt out, will they get rid of, you know, whatever people are opting out of? Or is it about funneling money to the curriculum producers? I don't know. I mean, do they get money specifically? I guess they would have to if you're using their books or something like that. Todd Welch, the executive orders need to stop being issued that are replacing congressional duties. This started under Obama with sweeping EOs and have continued under Trump and Biden. Congress makes or chooses not to create laws. Yeah, and I think both parties, as long as you're willing to acknowledge, sorry, I need a drink. As long as you're willing to acknowledge that both parties have taken things a little bit too far on the executive order front and on, you know, wartime, like what constitutes a declaration of war, so to speak? Because for those wringing their hands about Trump and Iran, you can make a lot of arguments about Obama as well. So, and Biden, for that matter. All right. Pride and obscene public displays. Renaud, exposing yourself to a minor or while in the presence of a minor is a gross misdemeanor in Washington State. I don't understand how these people get away with it. Yeah, I don't either. Chris Ireland, my wife and I stopped taking our kid to Pride because of the nakedness, as you should. It's just strange. I don't think your mic's on.
I don't know why anyone still takes their kids to Pride.
Yeah.
It's weird. Pretty disturbing.
On the Armed and Fabulous article, Charlie Knowlton, watch your misgendering. You might get shot. Yeah. I mean, they probably do want to shoot people who misgender them.
And also, I was in Vegas this weekend and I was thinking the same thing. I had this conversation with a friend while I was there that I can't believe anybody brings their kids to Vegas anymore because there's just, I mean, mostly naked people on the street and the billboards that drive by are absolutely obscene.
Right.
So I don't understand why people take their kids to Vegas. Maybe for a pool, but even at the pool, you're just surrounded with a bunch of drunk people and half naked people and whatever. So I try not to judge, but I'm like, what are you thinking?
I think it's parents who really want to go to Vegas and they can't go without
and
taking their kids.
They don't have any childcare or something. Yeah. But, ugh. Anyway.
Robert Von Darth, I wonder if I open carry a pistol while naked celebrating straight pride, would that be okay? Probably not. Probably not. Like just butt naked in downtown Seattle with nothing but a Make America Great Again hat, a pistol, and celebrating your heterosexuality, shot on site. Like SPD would be called in, guns blazing.
For sure.
Juneteenth parking tickets are racist. Old school sci-fi nerd says, so does that mean all American citizens get to park wherever they want on July 4th? Veterans on Veterans Day, Jewish people on Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur? I guess so. But again, you can't forgive them because you could sue right away. That would be such an easy lawsuit. In fact, I'm pretty sure I have a parking ticket from the city of Seattle. So I would file a lawsuit because I paid mine. I didn't get it excused.
But yeah, it's not about parking and not paying to park. It is about, like, it's a holiday, so you didn't pay. It's about parking in a dangerous zone or an illegal zone. Yeah. So get over it.
Holy smokes, a $200 super chat?
I know.
Wow, I don't know if we've ever gotten one that big.
It's pretty.
At Paladin Wives, I know it's off topic, but I love the brief interview a while back with Rachel Savage. She seems to be the only one running that wants to improve the business nightmare on Capitol Hill. Any chance of getting her back on? Maybe. We had her back on. We had her on when she was running for mayor, and then she changed really quick and was running for city council.
Yep.
So I'm not saying we won't, but at this point, I don't know if we have any plans to.
And last
Thank you
year,
for the generous super chat, though.
You know, last year we did a year of campaigns, we're not doing that this year. we'll get a little closer to November, right, and then we'll start talking about a lot of these.
Yeah, for sure. Like, you know, some of the hyper-local races, there's a lot of people who maybe don't have a particular stake in those, although I would argue what happens in Seattle matters. But yeah, I mean, we did a ton of campaign interviews last year, so I think we'll wait till it gets a little closer to primary time. Let's see here. Matt Gablisi, congrats to Nicole on the softball. Wait, you won the championship?
Yeah, man, we did.
You won a softball championship?
It was the championship. What did you get? That's why I came home early from Vegas.
What's the prize?
You know, just the, I can say we won the championship. I guess the pride is the prize.
Yeah.
There's no, I think we get a little bit of money. Maybe we get some of our entry fees, like, given back to us. I actually did, let me hold on here. I actually do have a photo. Mm.
Oh, you do?
Yeah.
Okay.
Why not? Let's see it. And I guess so, the reason it says Matt Gablisi, that's Matt Gilbert, but YouTube changed everybody's names.
Is that what's happening? Because I was like, what is going on? Why did they change the names?
I don't know.
God, that's really annoying.
That's really annoying, right?
Sorry, that wasn't us. Yeah, yes. I was like, why does everybody have weird screen names today?
Yeah, everybody's a little ticked off.
Oh, there you go. Oh, are those Pride uniforms?
No, they're cats. Actually, on the back, it's just like a cat eating pizza. I don't know.
Yeah, but it's feline, groovy. Pride colors.
Well, they don't own the rainbow.
Yes, they do. Yeah, no, they do. They sure do.
I'm going to call them Hawaiian uniforms.
Gotcha. Love it. Denise Young, FYI from Sunday show, a Corvair was in Ralph Nader Unsafe at Any Speed book from 1965. It was a running joke if you owned one, like Cybertrucks now. Because somebody was saying they drove a Corvair, they wanted a Corvair. And I was like, what is a Corvair? So apparently something I'm too young to understand, but I appreciate that. All right, good comments per the usual. And with that, let's get to our closing sanity check. So this is kind of in the vein of what's happening in Portland and citizens having enough of it. So there was a Trump-supporting Portland resident who went to also confront Antifa. And look, I expect if you go there wearing a Make America Great Again hat, they're probably going to mess with you. He probably knew that too. But this clip in particular, I think, proves something that I've said about these Antifa goons for a long, long time. So these are unserious people. It doesn't mean that they're not dangerous. They're obviously incredibly dangerous. But you can tell that these are people who probably didn't fit in high school, who maybe were even bullied in their estimation, and they're getting back at society. Like, this is their way to get even with perceived wrongs and to get back at society. And in their own way, they've just become the bullies that they claim to hate. Here's the clip.
Just so you're clear.
I know, I hear you.
We don't care.
Okay. I was telling you.
No, let me
I know you don't care. I know you don't care.
Let me be clear.
I know you don't care.
We don't care.
I know.
Okay.
I know.
So what are you doing?
I know. I'm just talking
about
I'm just talking on my ass.
We don't care.
I know.
We don't care.
I know.
We don't care.
So leave.
I have him on my phone right now.
Shut up. What? Oh God, dude, stop what you're doing.
Look at your ugly ass.
I know.
Oh,
that's a guy that started steroids and never followed through.
Like, high school insults. You're ugly. You're fat. I don't care what you have to say. I know I am, but what I know you are, but what am I? I mean, these are deeply unserious people who are trying to get back at society for perceived wrongs, and the powers that be just let them overtake cities. Just let them get away with it when you could crush them like bugs. That has been your sanity check for today. That has been today's episode of Undivided. Thank you so much for being here. Thank you for your commitment to giving common sense a comeback. We appreciate all of you very much. If you want to sign up to become a subscriber to the show, we would appreciate you even more. It's just $5 a month. You can sign up at undividedpod.com, undividedpod.com, and click on the banner that says support the show.